This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, July 25th, 2022. We are back from holiday and there is plenty going on. Lots to look at, especially this week, really kicking into full gear with the earnings season at its peak, certainly this week. And we have an FOMC meeting, not least. We'll be talking all about that, or I will be talking all about that in today's podcast. I'm by myself today. And generally for this week, though, we should have some good technical analysis features up later this week from Kim Kramer-Larsen. All right, let's have a look at where the market is here. We saw quite a run-up last week until Friday, where we peaked out and then rolled back over in part on a weak services PMI, the preliminary one for July from the S&P Global. Fairly short history of that. We'll talk about that in a moment. But we did roll over the squeeze, finding resistance around that 4,000 area. I think that's more interesting than the Fibonacci levels I put in on slide two for the S&P future. There, I think that 4,000 is a key psychological level as we're heading into earnings season and as we're wondering how the market is going to find its legs after another likely 75 basis point hike from the Fed this week and whatever guidance the Fed chooses to bring. You can see on the Saxo equity theme baskets that those sort of sectors and themes that were rallying the most this month, I sorted on a month to date, and you can see what has performed best is the riskiest stuff, high beta stuff out there, next gen medicine, crypto and blockchain, et cetera. And that was generally also those types, those themes that were the weakest on the day yesterday. So no huge surprises there. We have China on a very different sort of trajectory this month, as you can see on that month-to-date performance. And yeah, we're waiting for next steps here as the market is trying to decide whether it should be downbeat on recession fears or upbeat because we're seeing yields getting crushed lower by all of those recession fears, which help, of course, on the multiple front and help eventually bring forward the peak Fed funds rate and eventually the market hopes, of course, some easing. Let's look at that services PMI data point we saw on Friday. You can have a look at it. It's a preliminary one. It is the private survey. It has a short history, this survey, relative to the ISM services. They do generally move in the same direction on a moving average basis. But as you can see on slide three on the left there, I put this one up versus the ISM, which was still at a solid 55.3. That's, of course, it's come down from those crazy levels, record all-time highs, way above 60 and even 65. But 55.3 for the ISM services in June. And we're getting this preliminary July figure, however, from the S&P Global, coming from more like 52 in June, but dropping all the way to 47.0, suggesting actual contraction in the services sector, which would also suggest actual contraction in the U.S. economy because it is the dominant sector. So a really ugly data point there. Let's see if the ISM services next week backs that up. And as it was generally a global PMI day on Friday, we also got the preliminary data from July for Eurozone. You see that on the right, the composite dipping below 50, and the manufacturing was around that level as well, 49.6, with the services barely in expansion. And judging from my travels in Italy and what I'm hearing from others around in Europe, the American tourist is here in a big way in Europe. They were certainly all over Italy and every tourist destination I visited there. And I'm hearing as well in France, it's incredible numbers of American tourists. They may be helping to keep up some of these services data points in the Eurozone. And with this weak data point and some other weak data points, we've been seeing the jobless claims coming back higher. Once again, that 250 level, it's not seen since well back into last year on last Thursday. And then the Friday ugly data points, taking these U.S. yields sharply lower all across the yield curve. And you can see on slide four, we have that 10-year pushing down towards this really critical 2.7, 2.75% area that has been the lowest yield since all the way back in late April. You can see the yield curve I put on that same chart, very inverted. And let's keep in mind that we've gotten to the most inverted in the yield curve at as much as minus 20 plus basis points over the last couple of weeks, as we've seen since the year 2000. So profound yield curve inversion. And interesting to see how, of course, the market reacts to the FOMC, but also more incoming data, which really picks up next week, less so this week. I'll have the data overview in the macro calendar overlook at the end of the podcast here. And then on the right, I'm showing that the market is sort of bringing forward, and really the point at which the Fed reaches peak rates for the cycle, the market pricing that in for some time around the December and very early 2023 timeframe. As you can see in that little tiny insert of the prices for the different Eurodollar 3-month future contracts. On the chart below that, I'm showing just a number, all of the contracts basically from September of this year all the way out to March of 2024. That's that light gray, lightest gray line there on the chart. And you see that the market has pulled forward when it expects the Fed to reach peak rates, and that it expects the Fed to be easing fairly sharply, or at least that's where it's putting the risk or the odds, probabilities on that happening, such that we have an 85 basis point difference between that December contract for this year and the March 2024 contract. And then I saw it in a slide deck that my colleagues put up asking about financial conditions. We're still awaiting the most recent data point. This is a weekly data point that the Chicago Fed puts out. There are other measures that you can do on a daily data on a daily basis. But if we look at the series on slide 5, it's a really critical question whether we are seeing these financial conditions, or the pressure on financial conditions peaking and about to turn over. We have sort of lost momentum and we've gone sideways here. And you can see over the last 10 years, if you see on slide 5, that this has generally been coincident with the market finding a bottom. So all of those vertical lines I put in there were major market bottoms at the time. And you can see that financial conditions were under pressure and were generally rolling over beginning to improve right around the time the market also began to rally, or at least found a low and began to rally from there. So this is a key question. However, if we are talking about not just financial conditions related to the Fed, tightness of the Fed or not, and other factors, we're just talking about the major economic cycles. We go further back, the pattern was somewhat different. Financial conditions were less interesting. It was more about when the Fed was basically able to catch up with the amount of easing required to get the economy to move forward again. And you can see that in the on the slide 6, the following slide, put in the financial conditions again for the Chicago Fed. That's the blue line there. But I also put in the Fed funds rate, the black line, that you, of course, see moves in stepwise fashion as the Fed hikes and cuts. And you can see that back in the 2001 timeframe, they started cutting in early 2001. The market didn't bottom until late 2002. And even as the economy was sort of roaring forward in 2003, we saw one last little sort of setback for the market, basically towards the bottom, not setting a new low for the cycle, but towards the bottom, even as the economy was clearly recovering. Ironically, the Fed was still easing at that point. And then, of course, we all know the great financial crisis cycle in 2007. The Fed cut its first time in September of 2007, and it really didn't catch up to where the market needed in terms of assurances until early 2009. So something like a 18-month a time frame for those. That could be the case this time as well, from the point when the Fed realizes it can't hike anymore and thinks it needs to start easing. But of course, that would require that inflation comes down sufficiently for them to do so. And that is going to be a key part of the guidance this week from the Fed. Too early to talk about that. It's more about how they're seeing the forward path for rates from here after this these two big rate hikes that we've not seen the likes of since the 1994 cycle. All right, switching over to Europe, of course, some really big events last week with the very, very eventful Thursday, as we saw both the ECB out and having egg on its face on having to hike 50 basis points after it had specifically guided for a 25 basis point hike previously, and it wanted to remove forward guidance on the size of future hikes. I think that's a clever decision. But on the very same day that the ECB did this, and they've created this tool to manage peripheral spreads, this sort of, it's almost incoherent really to talk about hiking rates and tightening policy, whereas you're needing to loosen policy for the periphery to make sure that the so-called transmission or fragmentation is not a problem. And on the very same day, we have an Italian government that is falling apart as Draghi forced to resign because he could not get the support from sufficient parties in Italy. And therefore, we're calling an election. He's calling an election for September 25th. This saw these yield spreads widening, and quite aggressively so. As you can see on slide 7, the Germany-Italy spread widening to around 225 plus basis points. And as we look forward to a right populist Italian coalition, if those right populist parties can agree to work together, and that is a significantly open question. This Brothers of Italy party, or the Fratelli d'Italia, have quite strong principles and about who they'll work with. Certainly not the Democratic Party of Italy, but they have the numbers if they are able to form a coalition. Most likely, we have something like 46%. If you look at the voting, polling percentages on slide 7 on the right there, 23 for the Brothers of Italy, plus the 15 from the Lega and the Forza Italia adds up to about 46%. But a very key event risk for Europe. Things looking dire for the European economy, especially as we go into the fall. And on the next slide, I'm showing where we are with natural gas prices. For some reason, I repeated the yield spread chart, but you can see it there on the left as well on slide 8. But you can see as well on the right, the gas dependence for Russia, as Russia is out threatening to turn down the amount of gas it's sending through the pipeline. After last week, the good news was that they actually did restart the Nord Stream 1 gas deliveries after scheduled maintenance was complete last week. And we have these European gas prices at sustained highs that we haven't seen, even though there's some prior spikes that were higher. If you just look at the amount of time we've been at these levels, as you can see on that Netherlands 1 month forward at gas price chart on the lower right there, I mean, the screws are just getting turned on the European economy, and there's difficult decisions will have to be made about rationing and shutting down industries, especially for Germany, in terms of the components that are really critical for European economic activity. This is just a huge question. There's also signs of lack of solidarity, as there are hopes to have some sort of plan to reduce usage by 15% across the Eurozone, and some countries not interested in doing so. I believe it was Portugal and Spain that were speaking out against this. All very critical stuff for Europe. And you can see with Hungary's dependence there on that slide, with being a 40% plus dependent on natural gas deliveries, one of the reasons why the populist leader Orban is not playing ball with the Eurozone in his approach to Russia on the natural gas issue. And then over in FX, with all of these yield drops we've talked about in the US, we're finally seeing this getting some respect in the Japanese yen, with oil prices also down, that both of those helping the yen to look less unattractive, as of course yield spreads compress, given that the Bank of Japan insists on that yield cap on its 10-year and shorter duration or shorter maturity Japanese government bond debt. So that has taken dollar yen back below this 136 area, at least at times, the previous high there, 136.35, I believe it was, as you can see on the chart on slide 9 in the FX overview. You know, still, given that we're at these multi-month lows or near them in the U.S. 10-year Treasury benchmark, for example, something that the yen has historically been very sensitive to, the yen still underperforming. So the question is, do we have to have the Fed, in absolutely simply having stopped hiking rates and in reverse, full reverse, to see a more significant yen rally? I find it quite a remarkable aberration to historical patterns. But arguably, we still are seeing the Fed hiking. We are still seeing the quantitative tightening continue. The dollar still is the reserve currency. So until we get an absolute change of direction from the Fed, arguably, there is some further potential for the dollar to rise here. And again, given what I just showed on Europe and the natural gas situation there, I think the risk is for euro dollar to tend back lower towards a test of parity again. And given where commodity prices are, I find it a bit curious that the Aussie is doing as well as it has been doing lately. But it's still below the 0.70 level, which is really key. And the Swiss franc, given Europe's woes, makes sense to have seen Euro-Swiss trading to those lows well below parity and even below 0.99. All right, I've been jabbering on about a lot of issues this week, but as many of you are equity traders, of course, the key thing this week is that we are at the peak week of the earnings season, as you can clearly see on slide 10. Look at the slew of companies reporting, basically all of the major, largest mega caps out reporting this week. Some of these I've highlighted in red. I think it's interesting to see one of the first one reporting is Alphabet after the close tomorrow. And you can see that that reduction or the feared reduction in advertising spending is really got that chart quite heavy relative to the broader averages. Interesting there. And a number of interesting stories that are going to be discussed this week with earnings. We'll have better reporting on earnings, of course, next week when we have our equity strategist, Peter Garnry, returning and on the podcast. But consider other names this week, like Louis Vuitton, with also reporting out tomorrow. Interesting to see. This is a semi-annual report. So where they are relative to this incredible boost to their spending. They saw, I think, a lot of that driven by asset price appreciation. We're in a very different space over the last 6 months, certainly on that front, than where we were in the crazy pumped up asset markets of late 2020 and basically much of 2021 as well. So there's those. There are the car companies reporting. What are they saying about the shortages on of semiconductors? That's General Motors tomorrow, Ford Wednesday. We also have Volkswagen up on Thursday after they've booted their CEO. And of course, again, all the major mega caps from Alphabet tomorrow to Microsoft Wednesday, Meta Wednesday, Apple and Amazon on Thursday. And even oil giants like ExxonMobil out reporting on Friday. One key thing to note, as I put in from that Financial Times headline that I clipped and pasted onto slide 10, is that we have a very strong U.S. dollar. So all these U.S.-based companies that have significant revenue streams abroad will be, of course, affected by that strong dollar we've seen in the second quarter of this year. All right, let's look at the macro calendar for the week. We'll talk more about this as the week progresses. Very little on the day today. Maybe worth noting, though, that the Chicago Fed National Activity Index is expected to dip negative for the first time for this little cycle here. And I would suggest that we're potentially dipping close to recession in the U.S. One of the regional manufacturing activity indices, one of the regional manufacturing surveys from the Dallas Fed out today. And we have tomorrow the July consumer confidence, the Conference Board consumer confidence survey from the U.S. Again, as I've gone endlessly on about, this one has not even reached new lows for the cycle, whereas the Michigan survey, more inflation related in the questions, has dipped these record lows, although it did stabilize recently. And by the way, the preliminary July one, we didn't do a podcast when this was released earlier this month. The 5 to 10 year inflation forecast all the way down to 2.8% after a preliminary print in June that had it up at 3.3%. So I'm sure the Fed is very relieved to see that at least that source of its inflation expectations coming down and coming down hard. It's back within the historic range of the last 10 years or so. So at least one data point that takes the pressure off the Fed to continue to surprise on the hawkish side. Other little bits and pieces, the June new home sales on Tuesday, we're seeing housing related stuff really coming down hard. The NAHB survey collapsed something like 10 or 12 points for July, or whatever the most recent month was. I believe it was July. I was running down all the calendar data points I missed, so forgive my lack of sharpness on all these data points. Q2 CPI, only quarterly CPI releases, so that's key for Australia ahead of the RBA decision next week. Of course, the FOMC meeting and the guidance there, 75 basis points, nearly universally expected from the Fed this week. And the first estimate of Q2 GDP, which is very interesting because it's expected to be close to zero, expected at 0.5%. So after a negative Q1 print on the big inventory effects, very interesting to see this print and whether we're in a technical recession already here in Q2. Germany and Eurozone CPI prints are up Thursday and Friday, respectively, as is the June PCE inflation indicator from the US, that tardy but key inflation indicator that the Fed uses for its measure of inflation. All right, I think struggling, of course, as you can probably hear on today's podcast, to get back fully up to speed with how things are shaping up here for global markets. But it really is a key week ahead, and we'll do our best to take you through it day by day. That's a wrap for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. for feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.